Let's begin with three deep breaths. And with a deep in breath. The symbol you see there is Sanskrit. And it's the Sanskrit word for Om. In our letters, it's OM. And there's the Sanskrit for it. The sound of Om. This is from the Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord. That was chapter 17, I think. Sound of Om. The scripture is the three words that represent the absolute, which is called Brahman in Sanskrit. We heard a lot of talk about that today, didn't we? About God. Which our speaker said was called the universe, or source, divine mind. Here it's referred to as the absolute, and in Sanskrit, Brahman. The three words that represent the absolute Brahman are Om Tat Sat, Om Tat Sat. Out of this arose the spiritual wisdom, the scriptures, and self-sacrifice. We're going to look at Om Tat Sat, what that means. The scripture says that out of these three words, which represent God or the Absolute, arose spiritual wisdom. So from God came spiritual wisdom. The scriptures and self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice is interesting. We sort of think of sacrifice as virgins being tossed into the fire. Here, self-sacrifice means more, or has more the meaning of selfless action, which is what we ascribe to here at Unity. Selfless action. Selfless action. The three words that represent the absolute, Om Tat Sat. Out of Om Tat Sat arose spiritual wisdom, the scriptures, and self-sacrifice. Or selfless action. It occurred to me that we're not real clear on the meaning of self-sacrifice or selfless action. So I thought of a little exercise. A little exercise, which we can do together if you want to. And the exercise is this. If you were a teacher giving a class to some young adults, and you were to give them a test, the young adults. And the test had one question. The question to the young adults is, what is your purpose in life? And it's multiple choice, or there are three selections. What is your purpose in life? So if you were the teacher, I'm devising a test, and the question is, what is your purpose in life? What might be the three choices that you would put forth? What is your purpose in life? What would be three choices?
A, spiritual presence. B, material possessions, the seeking of material possessions. C, being right.
Being right, all right. So, young adults are taking the test. What is your purpose in life? Spiritual life, material possessions, are being right. We can guess they wouldn't choose being right. And maybe material possessions, but who would want to admit it?
Right.
So spiritual,
easy, yeah.
Spiritual
yeah.
Might be the answer that people choose because they want the teacher to approve of them.
Yeah.
And approve of their answers.
Right.
And make them right,
right.
Which is what they want. One purpose in life could be to be have a life, or a purpose in life is to be of use, or to be of service to others. And that purpose in life, to be of use or to be of service to others, is part of this tradition that we're studying. So the ability to dedicate one's life to being of service to others would be useful. That very idea was given to us when we were created according to these scriptures. The three words that represent absolute, Om Tat Sat, we'll look at that. Out of this arose spiritual wisdom, the scriptures, and the idea of dedicating our lives to be of service to others. Self-sacrifice. That's what self-sacrifice means here. Let's look a little deeper.
It's really hard to practice that, particularly given our modern culture, in terms of how I was raised, and the influence of our friends and family. It's
when we look at what we are persuaded to do, persuaded to like, enticed,
right,
to
rewarded
to do or have or get, it's not to have a life of service to others. Rather, it's to acquire things.
Or to be in competition.
And be in competition and to, right. To be better than someone else.
The belief of that.
And to compare oneself with others all the time.
Yeah.
I'm better, have more stuff than that person on the street or homeless. I don't have as much as those people. We have all those things. This idea of self-sacrifice or service is part of this spiritual tradition. So spiritual wisdom in Sanskrit are called the Brahmanas. The scriptures are called the Vedas. And self-sacrifice or lack of service is called yajna. Those are the Sanskrit words. So that's all of the scripture, and Satchidananda is going to go with this. Here's his commentary. Om Tat Sat is a mantra. Om, the sound itself, is the truth. Tat means that. Sat means truth. I had to struggle with this a bit. It seemed redundant. Om Tat Sat. Om, the sound itself, is the truth. Tat means that. Sat means truth. The first manifestation of the absolute truth takes form as the unspoken sound, Om. Before the Big Bang, the universe was created. And after the universe was created, but before the advent of life, there was the unspoken sound, which we now speak as Om. So that sound itself was something that has always been there, pre-exists our speaking of it. Now we can better understand Om Tat Sat. Om itself is a thing. That sound is a thing. And at the same time, it's the symbol of itself. So for example, what's this? We say chair. Chair is the symbol for this, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is chair this? No. Chair is the symbol for this. So we have something, and we have a symbol in our language, chair, so that we can communicate. So when I say chair, you imagine this. Om is like this. And at the same time, Om is the symbol for itself. That's why when we make the sound of Om, it has a special resonance in us. We feel something. And according to scriptures, the sound itself is the truth. The sound itself we make is the truth. So the mantra is Om, that's truth. Om, that's truth. Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat.
The sound is true, because if you look at an infant or a child, they emit sound before they actually create a word. Since we create a word, then now we're going to the symbolism, or the intellect, or the description of the truth, which is the various forms of happiness, contentment, pleasure, and then of course all the unpleasant feelings that the body can emanate with sound. Just the sounds itself is true.
Very true. We've discerned something here. We've discerned that there are things in our experience and there are symbols or names for them. And here is something which we experience, and it itself is the symbol for itself.
Right.
It's a symbol for itself. Om Tat Sat. So it's like truth. Ah, that's truth. And the first manifestation of this absolute truth takes form as the unspoken sound, Om. And later on, when speakers like us come around, we speak it. The true Om is the hum. That's the true Om. It's the hum. Not the ah, oh, it's the
Right.
When people repeat their mantras, they should stress the the humming part of the mantra. Satchidananda is making an assumption here. In his tradition, many people adopt a mantra. What is a mantra for you, Sam?
That's mine.
Pardon me?
It's the sign. It's acceptance. The sign of acceptance. The
mantra,
for me, is a sound.
According to this tradition,
yeah,
is a set of words that we have memorized, that we use when we want to take the mind away from whatever it's choosing to think and put it in the mantra so that it doesn't run away and think the thoughts we do not wish it would think. In the Christian tradition, a mantra could be Holy Mother, Mary of God. And a mantra is designed for constant repetition, because as soon as you stop, the mind kicks in and goes, such thoughts. We've seen pictures of people from India or people using prayer beads.
Rosary.
Rosary, or prayer beads. In the Catholic tradition, it's a rosary. In the wider Middle East tradition, it's prayer beads.
Right.
People, I lived in the Middle East for a while, people carry around, they're not really prayer beads, I forgot what they call it now, and people will use these beads, not in a religious sense, but as a way to keep their minds from heading off somewhere. Holy Mother Mary of God. So it's repeated, Holy Mother Mary of God, Holy Mother Mary of God. And if you don't have the practice of a mantra, it may seem a little different. Holy Mother Mary of God, Holy Mother Mary of God. At least when I was growing up, it seemed that way. I saw the pictures in the movies, Holy Mother Mary of God. And those people were not like us. Somehow they were different. Not like us, Holy Mother Mary of God. They need it, I don't. Holy Mother Mary of God. The nuns, you know, Holy Mother Mary of God. They needed their saying, but I don't. Wonder what they do. And that perhaps later on we learned that a mantra can be useful to anyone as just another spiritual technique for reining in the rambunctious mind. In the tradition that we're talking about here, the recommendation is that you don't decide on your mantra. Because deciding is something that I, me, my, I do, ego type thing. The recommendation is that your spiritual guide give you a mantra. And you use that. It's also recommended you don't share that mantra with anyone, because someone might say something that would cast a shadow or something on it, and it's something special for you. Then you can use that mantra the rest of your life. Whenever your mind is running away with itself, and you use those holy words to bring your mind back to peace. So that's the assumption here. And the assumption here is that oftentimes a mantra will include the word Om, or the sound Om. Mantra will include the sound Om. The true Om is the hum. When people repeat their mantras, they should stress the humming part of the mantra. That hum is the very first sound, or the first word, which is God. The hum is the very first sound, the sound before there were any of us around to hear a sound, or the first word before there were any people speaking words. And that hum is God. truth, God, same thing. Om Tat Sat.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth.
Yeah, I know I'm in more harmony when I'm humming outside by myself in nature. That's when I'm in union with all.
Maybe we have so many ways of attuning ourselves back to our true nature. This is one, using a mantra. The sound of God. The Bible says, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. Our Bible says the same thing. The Word was God. God. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. We've seen this before, but I don't think we've ever really delved into what it says to us. What does it really mean? This was always rather mysterious to me as a young person when I read it. It sounded great.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning was the Word. Ah. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word was Om. Om is truth. Om is God. And it still is God. It still is God. Don't worry about the grammar, Satchitananda recommends. The spirit of scriptural wisdom is more important than taking every letter literally. The Word itself is God, the Son. I think we experience that when we consciously make the sound of Om.
Mm-hmm.
We feel some spiritual vibration. We don't need to call it God, we could. As long as we think if God is something separate, as we heard in the talk today, that doesn't work. But when you begin to think of God as Sam, Janice, and me, and all of our, all that manifests, that would include then those vibrations. It's God. The Word and God are not two different things. Not different things. Name and the one denoted by the name are not two different things at all. That's what we were talking about. This and chair are two different things. There's experience and the symbol chair. Different. But name and the one denoted by the name are not two different things at all. The name becomes the form. And actually that's true. When I say chair now, actually it is a chair for us. Chair, the word actually becomes a chair as well as our understanding of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why language is so invisible to us. Chair. That is, the word itself is that thing. That's why it's useful to know more than one language, because in multiple languages, the same thing has different words denoting it.
Okay.
So we become aware there's different words for the same thing. And you know some Korean, right? Mm-hmm.
This is finished.
Enough. And when does language become automatic? Or if you're learning a language, what's the point at which it becomes natural? When the words become the things. When I was learning French, in the beginning I had to translate. I had to translate. So l'amour, oh, that's love. So I hear the word l'amour, oh, that's love. Then there came a point where l'amour was love, and I no longer needed to translate. And that's when I began to truly speak the language. When the word truly becomes the thing, that's when you are fluent, becoming fluent in language. The name becomes the form. If you keep repeating the name, it becomes solidified and creates a form. If you keep repeating the name. And that's what you do when you learn a new language, isn't it? You keep repeating and repeating and repeating. And eventually, at some point, the name becomes solidified and creates the form. I thought we might do a little exercise now to experience name being the same as form.
Okay.
We can do a little OM exercise, just for fun. So what I suggest we do is we together repeat the name, the sound of OM together for about 30 seconds. And we don't need to do it in unison. It's actually better if we are out of cycle. We just repeat it on our own. Alright, so let's begin. Om. As we remember what we just experienced, our oming itself was a thing. We might describe it later as, oh, we did om together. That's not how we remember it. We remember what actually happened, that energy of OM. So we use the word to describe what we actually experience. Interesting, isn't it? Here's what Satchitananda says. Sprinkle a few sand particles on a thin piece of glass. Put a speaker below, then continually repeat a sound. Sound creates patterns. The vibrations of the sound will arrange the particles in patterns. The sound.
Is it the same particle each time, or does it depend on the sound?
I don't know. I just know that if you sprinkle some fine particles on a piece of glass and put a sound underneath, the particles rearrange themselves from that sound, and probably arrange themselves differently depending on the sound. Probably do. I expect you're right. Creates patterns. So it is with everything, Satchitananda says. All forms are created by names, by sound. All the names that we use create the forms by sound. So here's where he's going to point out that we need to be a little more cognizant of the names we use. He says, if you look at a person and constantly call him a monkey, in one sense, he'll become one. You can make a monkey out of him. We know this is true. We know from our unity teaching that when we label someone, which is to name them, it can help or harm someone. If a mother or father continually calls a child stupid, you're stupid. What a stupid person you are. That's a stupid thing you've done. Why did God give me such a stupid child as you? I don't deserve such a stupid child. Why can't you change yourself so you won't be so stupid? The word can actually become incorporated in the child, and the child can get the idea, I'm stupid. This happens. And then that can go so deep that only a very lucky adult can free themselves from being stupid and considering themselves stupid. They may be ashamed of being stupid, so they may not want anyone to find out they're stupid. And one of their prime objectives or purposes in life is to hide the fact that they're stupid. And how do you hide your stupid? By pretending to be smart. So we see this strange behavior in people. They're always proving how smart they are. Proving how smart they are, doing things to prove how intelligent and how smart they are. And perhaps it's because inside they feel stupid, but they don't want you to know, because if you knew they were stupid, you wouldn't respect them and you wouldn't love them. They want to be loved. So by pretending to be smart, they can avoid not being loved, and avoid being disrespected. That's the power of names, of making a monkey out of someone. The power of our word. As we think and speak, so we become. I think we'll close with this. There's another danger here. When we call people a monkey, we take on the qualities we talk about. We take on the qualities we talk about. That's why if we keep talking about others' problems, why are you so stupid? We will be filled with problems. Why are you so stupid? Wonder if I'm stupid. Wonder if I'm stupid. You're a monkey. I'm a monkey. So the more we talk about others' problems, we get filled with their problems. And Rev Ross talked about this 2 weeks ago in his sermon, and I have a picture from it, which I'll put up. Now, we can look at it. Do you tell God how big your problems are? Or do you tell your problems how big your God is? Remember that? You tell your, my problem is I'm stupid. That's my problem, and I have to look smart.
That's great.
And when everybody find out that my problem is I'm stupid, you tell God how big your problems are, how stupid you really are. Or do you tell your problems how big your God is? So rather than talking about your problem stupidity, do you talk to yourself about how big God is? How big your God is? Is your mental focus on how big your God is? And how God is who you are, and that's who you are. And what happens? Instead of being stupid like you used to be, you become God. You are what your mind thinks about. And we heard this in the sermon today. You are what your mind thinks about. Sometimes we don't see the best in others. Instead, we constantly think terrible things about them. In today's environment, is there anyone whatsoever out there that you might just possibly think some terrible bad things about? Well, maybe you don't, but in your watching the news and social media, are there others out there who are thinking bad things about others? Are there people out there who are saying, those others are bad? I remember during the 2016 election, when a very talented and effective man announced during the presidential debate that this was Crooked Hillary. And he repeated that name, Crooked Hillary, Crooked Hillary, Crooked Hillary. Some of us who were for Secretary Clinton knew that wasn't true, felt it was not true. And yet we kept hearing, Crooked Hillary, Crooked Hillary, lock her up, lock her up. And to that very effective naming, even to those of us who knew it wasn't true, we began seeing Crooked Hillary against our best judgment and against our wishes it weren't so, began seeing Crooked Hillary and lock her up. Labels stick. Labels stick. Sometimes we don't see the best in others. Instead, we constantly think terrible things about them, things that we've thought up or things that others have fed to us and we haven't gotten rid of. Too seldom do we praise people. Not only too seldom do we praise people, but too seldom do we respect people. Is there anyone out there that you just can't see anything to praise about? Is there anyone in your cognizant world for whom there's nothing you can see to praise? Might be nice to praise that person, but even if you can't praise them, can you find something to respect in them? Our unity teaching says that even that very person whom you don't find praiseworthy does have something worth praise, and that is that person's innate goodness. That was the sermon today. That person's innate goodness. Can we praise or respect that person's innate goodness? Too seldom do we praise people, and what happens? The more we think and talk of undesirable things, the more we become that. It's one thing to hear an undesirable thing, but to repeat it to others and think about it and talk to others about it, the more we become that. We may hear Crooked Hillary. That's one thing. But do we, in our conversation, repeat Crooked Hillary to others? Maybe even in jest. Maybe you were for it. But in jest, laughing, do we say, oh, well, Crooked Hillary did that. Just by thinking of that and keeping that in our minds and talking of it, we become Crooked Hillary. We are Crooked Hillary. That's the danger. This is where we probably have to close. It's 11 o'clock. And I have some more which we could continue next week. Questions or comments?
That's very interesting how we see the the fault in others. Is it really the fault, if we stop and think about it, is the fault that we see in ourselves? It's really fascinating.
Or maybe we create the fault in ourselves when we see it in others.
Or we stimulate it, right?
It's there and we stimulate it, or maybe we create it.
Going forward.
Maybe we create it. See the fault in others. Maybe it's not that it was always already there and we just never noticed it and that's why we're seeing it in others. Maybe just by pointing it out in others, we literally create it in ourselves. Maybe before that, we held ourselves as faultless in this area. That came for the good. The minister today in the talk talked about how he heard something that he felt was bad, and later on he saw that's what stimulated him to become the person he was, and now he held it as good. So we hold it as good. By pointing out the fault in others, we create or recreate in ourselves. This is the power of our word.
Yeah.
Don't take my word for it, or of any of these teachings.
Sure.
We look in ourselves and say, I wonder,
right.
Is that what I experienced?
It's back when music reminds me of this. The sounds that creates the belief in the words. Or the sounds that, and then the words and then the beliefs. Separation. Either or. Black and white thinking. Good or bad.
Anything else? Shall we make the sound of all? Close. With three breaths. Deep breath. Peace.